Welcome to Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour with your host, Fanny Crawford. Today is Monday, April 10th, and today we're going to be talking about tall tales. We'll have an original tall tale from yours truly, and then probably a couple traditional tales. Enlighten Radio is broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and I usually start with a calendar update, beginning with the Speak story series, which starts up again this month. Adam Booth's story venue will be meeting this season, season 5, in Reynolds Hall, right across the street from the former location, but we're no longer at the Shepherdstown Community Club, now meeting in Reynolds Hall. And on Tuesday, April 18th, Antonio Rocha opens season 5. Antonio is a Brazilian-American storyteller now living in Maine. He's a mime, has trained with the world's most famous and most popular mimes. And there's a brand new membership offering from the Speak Story Series. So if you're interested in becoming a member, you get a break on the individual sessions. The 9 storytellers will be coming to speak over the next 9 months from April through December. But you also get some special opportunities to meet with some of these tellers and chat with them one-on-one and in a group. So if you're interested in that, you can go to the www.speakstoryseries.com, or you can contact Adam Booth directly at 304-886-9481. I'm really excited about this first session that's coming up on April 18th, and you want to get your tickets early because Antonio is a very popular and well-known storyteller. So it is possible that venue will sell out before we get there. So you want to check out those tickets early. Stories in the Round in Hagerstown, the story series that I coordinate, starts up again on April 24th, and we have Eloise Schottler returning to Stories in the Round for the first time in 3 years, and she's going to be telling her story about the nurses of Johns Hopkins Nursing School who went to the battlefront in France during World War I, sent by General Pershing. And Eloise has researched that story through letters and interviews with family members of these 64 young women who went to France in 1917. And she'll be telling their stories on April 24th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown. That's where we meet every month, at 13245 Searfoss Pike at the west end of Hagerstown. If you want more information about the series or about that particular teller, you can reach me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. If you're wondering, if you're walking along the street and hearing this radio program from someone else's internet device and you want to know how to check in yourself, you can go to www.enlightenradio.org and tune in. This will be a one-hour program, and we just got started, so you'll be hearing a whole lot more. We're going to be talking about tall tales today, and I have an original tall tale that I'll share with you. I guess I'll start with that one. This is a story from my childhood, and I tell this a lot for kids, but adults are usually pretty enthusiastic about this story too. When I do tell for children always ask at the end, "Is that true?" And then we have a conversation about what is a tall tale and what makes a tall tale. And I try to have them point out the elements in the story which probably really did happen and some of those that probably did not. And that's always fun. And the kids that are most into that, in distinguishing between truth and silliness are the older kids. It's very interesting. I always expected that the fours and fives would be the ones that would really get into imagination, but often it's the 9 through 17-year-olds that really get into the spirit and come up with their own tall tales or the beginnings of things that actually happened to them that they can spin off into the ether. So it's always fun to tell this story to a mixed audience. This is called Jep and Dank. I grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a staid and historic city. My parents were staid and historical, bookish people. My dad had a bookstore, and my mom was a librarian. You know, bookish people are often no-nonsense people. Just the facts, ma'am, as they used to say on a TV show called Dragnet when I was a little girl. My mom was a no-nonsense, just-the-facts kind of person. At least I thought she was. Until one morning at breakfast, when I was 8 years old and my little brother was 3, Mom was spooning oatmeal into our bowls. Plip-plop, into my bowl. Plip-plop, into Doug's bowl. When she laughed, you know, I don't think I ever told you about Uncle Hank's imaginary friends. You know, your Uncle Hank is my little brother. When we were children together, he had 2 little make-believe boys, pretend friends who lived under his bed. He called them Jep and Dank. I was astonished. No one had ever told me I could have imaginary friends. My no-nonsense mother seemed to think it was amusing to have make-believe children around. Well, that was all she said on the subject. She went down the hall, chuckling to herself, to get dressed for work. But I had so many questions. Did Jep and Dank live under the bed all the time or only when Uncle Hank was asleep? I only knew Uncle Hank as a grown-up, but when he was a little boy, did Jep and Dank go to school with him? I knew Uncle Hank was a soldier in World War II, stationed in Alaska, where he'd been a radio operator during the war. Were Jep and Dank with him in Alaska? And where were Jep and Dank right now? I wondered about Jep and Dank all day long at school and far into the night, lying in bed in the dark. In the morning, I was still thinking about Jep and Dank. Well, my little brother Dougie must have been thinking about Jep and Dank, too, because at breakfast that morning, he put a big spoonful of oatmeal in his mouth and said, Jep and Dank spent the night under my bed. Whoa, hold on. These were heirloom children. If they were going to live under someone's bed, someone besides Uncle Hank, it should be my bed. I was the oldest child. It was very annoying for my little brother to claim these make-believe friends were under his bed. On the other hand, I was 8 years old. It would look silly for me to argue with my baby brother about imaginary children. I fretted and fumed to myself all that day at school. That night, in bed in the dark, I was still mad at my whole family. Why had no one told me about Jep and Dank when I was 3 years old? The perfect age for imaginary friends. Well, finally, I decided there was something I could do right now. I could get out of bed, tiptoe down the hall, and peek under Dougie's bed and just see about these imaginary friends. I sat up on the side of my bed, put on my red slipper socks with the moccasin bottoms. I tiptoed in the dark to the door of my room. Hanging on the doorknob was my red Lucky Ducky sweater made just for me by Big Fanny, my parents' good friend. It was made of soft red wool with yellow ducks knitted right into the sweater on either side of the yellow lucky ducky buttons down the front. I put the sweater on and tiptoed into the hall. I could hear snoring. That was Daddy. I took a few steps past my parents' bedroom door. I could hear a ladylike snore. That was Mom. I tiptoed down the hallway. I could hear deep breathing. That was Dougie. The door to his room was open at the far end of our apartment. I bent down and crawled slowly toward the other side of the room where Dougie's youth bed was. A youth bed was a child-sized bed with high sides, with slats or bars like a crib. When your child was a baby, you could raise the sides high so the bed looked just like a crib. When your child was older, maybe 2 or 3 years old, you could lower the crib sides so they were just a few inches above the mattress. Now, those low sides protected your child from falling out in the night, but he could still climb out over the rail. And when the side was lowered like that, the bottom of the bars or the rails were down almost, but not quite, to the floor. Now I was crawling across the dark room to the rails when I saw two little eyes gleaming at me from the deep dark beneath the youth bed. Then I saw two little hands grab hold of the bars, a little smiling mouth and some spiky light-colored hair above the eyes. I stopped crawling, sat back, and said the first thing that came into my head, hello, you look like you're in a zoo. A second pair of eyes rushed forward and two more little hands grabbed two bars next to the first pair of hands. There was a smiling mouth and spiky dark hair. A squeaky voice said, hi, I'm Jep, and that's Dank. Did you say zoo? We love zoos. There are monkeys and ice cream and Cracker Jacks at the zoo. Do you know where there's a zoo? Well, Jep's question seemed a strange one, but I did know a zoo. I loved going to the Philadelphia Zoo with my parents. So I said, yeah, the Philadelphia Zoo is 5 blocks away at 38th Street on Girard Avenue. I waved my hand in the general direction of 38th Street. Just that fast, those two little boys rolled out from under the bed, jumped up on Dougie's windowsill. The window was only open about 6 inches, but they went right out that first floor window and jumped down into the alley beside our apartment building. Oh no! I'd lost the heirloom children! Children were not supposed to run around Philadelphia in the middle of the night, especially with hardly any clothes on. Those boys didn't have any shirts or shoes or socks, just a dirty pair of underwear on each of them. I had to get them back. But I was a child myself. I was not supposed to be running around in the dark. Still, it was my fault. They had jumped out the window. I told them how to get to the zoo. And I was a big sister. Well, I did have on my slipper socks with the moccasin bottoms and my red Lucky Ducky sweater. I would have to do this. I had to get them back. I took a deep breath and followed Jep and Dank out the window. I ran down the alley to Parkside Avenue. I could see Jep and Dank far ahead, running fast down the street toward the zoo. They were far away, but I shouted as loud as I could, Jep! Dank!
Pink, come back! We have Breyers ice cream here in our kitchen ice box!
But they didn't even turn around. So I ran after them. By the time I reached Girard Avenue at the end of Parkside, they'd already disappeared at the turning into the zoo entrance. By the time I reached the big black wrought iron gates to the zoo, they were on the other side of the locked gate, running up the hill toward Monkey Island. I hadn't come all this way to wait out here, so I did what they must have done. I climbed the iron gate. It was a long way up and up and a long way down. By the time I was down on the other side, they were out of sight and I could hear monkeys hooting and hollering. I ran in the direction of all the commotion. Monkey Island was really a hill surrounded by a moat, a little river of water meant to keep the monkeys safely on the hill, separate from the rest of the zoo. But Jep and Dank had rolled two enormous garbage cans right into the moat and used them as a bridge to get onto the island with the monkeys. Just as the bridge allowed Jep and Dank to cross onto the island, it allowed the monkeys to escape off the island, and dozens of hooting and hollering monkeys scrambled over the garbage cans and into the rest of the zoo. Well, I ran around the moat to the other side of the island searching for Jep and Dank, but since there were no monkeys left to play with, the boys had splashed through the moat on that side and were running up a path that I knew led to the elephant house. Now I was seriously worried. Monkeys were everywhere, climbing up trees and onto the cages of other animals. Maybe they could even open the doors of the elephant house. There were many large and scary four-footed animals in there, not all of them friendly. Besides the elephants, I was pretty sure there were hippos and rhinoceri, and maybe even a mean-tempered musk ox with giant horns. It didn't take me long to reach the doors of the elephant complex. Either the monkeys or Jep and Dank had got the doors open and the cages too, because there were all sorts of animals strolling about or running into each other. An angry rhinoceros charged two musk oxen who started battering the rhino with their horns. An enormous 10-foot-tall African elephant ripped open bags of grain from a storage closet inside the elephant house and then raised his trunk and trumpeted, Jep and Dank were right by the door, though, chasing a couple of monkeys around the elephant keeper's dark office. I grabbed each of them by one hand and pulled them through the big front double doors with me, just as the angry rhinoceros started to paw the ground and charge us. The door latch swung shut and clicked behind us, so I knew we were safe from the rhino, at least till the monkeys opened the door again. But now that I had hold of those two bad boys, what was I going to do with them? And how was I going to get us all home? On the path ahead of us, monkeys climbed the roof of a refreshment stand with a Breyers ice cream sign on the roof. The door of the refreshment stand was bolted, and the serving window was covered with a heavy board hinged at the top and latched at the bottom. Jep and Dank pulled me over to that heavy board. I watched in amazement as they pushed up the board just enough at the bottom to get their skinny arms inside and unhook the latch. Well, that gave me an idea. With the latch open, I raised the heavy hinged board and let Jep and Dank each take two ice cream sandwiches and two boxes of Cracker Jacks out of the food stand. Then I pulled off my sweater, laid it on the ground, and sat both boys down on top of the sweater. By the time they finished their ice creams. I had buttoned up the sweater with the boys inside, tied the sleeves together, and made a sort of a backpack. I swung the whole package on my back and thought about that long walk home with two heavy, squirming boys. I heard a lion roar. That made me jump. It sounded like it was right behind me. No time to waste hanging about here. I remembered in my dreams, when I was in an uncomfortable or scary situation, sometimes I could close my eyes, stretch out my arms, push off with my legs, and fly to safety. This evening had been strange enough to make me think anything was possible. I climbed up on top of the bronze statue of the baby hippo outside the elephant house to get some height. I centered the sweater backpack full of boys on my back, and with one corner of the sweater backpack in my teeth, I stretched out my arms, bent my knees, and kicked off. I wobbled for a moment before I gained altitude, but we were up and in the air. I could hear car doors slamming and men shouting on the ground as patrol cars and military vehicles carrying uniformed soldiers and policemen screeched through the gates at both ends of the zoo. Overhead, I could see searchlights crossing in the sky. Hidden behind the tops of trees along Girard Avenue by the zoo and the trees along Parkside Avenue, we made it all the way back to our house. Jep and Dank were all knees and elbows poking and kicking me as they argued about their Cracker Jack prizes. But once we reached Parkside Avenue, they quieted down. I was never so glad to see Dougie's open window. I landed in the alley, pushed the sweater bundle through the window, and waited anxiously as it fell to the floor with a loud thud. I couldn't hear anything else moving in Dougie's room, so I climbed in myself. A few buttons were missing from my Lucky Ducky sweater, but I opened it up and heard a small, squeaky yawn, and a voice said sleepily, "We love zoos and ice cream and Cracker Jacks." And then I pushed Jep and Dank as far back under the bed as I could reach. The next thing I remember, it was morning, and Mom was calling me. "Fanny, breakfast! Your oatmeal's ready!" She came into my room, her hand on the doorknob, and on my Lucky Ducky sweater. "My goodness, what happened to Big Fanny's sweater? It looks like you were wrestling wild animals. And what's this? Peanuts, caramel popcorn, everywhere. Where did you find Cracker Jacks?" I don't think I ever told her the whole story of our night at the zoo, and it was a long time before I wanted to talk about imaginary friends. You're listening to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour on Enlighten Radio, www.enlightenradio.org. I'm your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford, and we're talking about tall tales today. I hope you know what a tall tale is and that you are firmly planted on the ground well enough to know the difference between what's true in a tall tale and what's not. Or at least what's possible and what's not. I do love tall tales, and it's a lot of fun remembering what happened to you as a kid and thinking about what you really wanted to happen instead of what did. Calendar updates. I've already told you about the Speak Story series, season 5, starting again on April 18th with Antonio Hosha, and the membership option that the Speak Story series has developed for this year. You can get more information about the storytellers coming up and the session on April 18th, Tuesday, April 18th, with Antonio Hosha. You, by going to www.speakstoryseries.org, that's a new website. So you should disappear the old website and focus on speakstoryseries.com. I'm sorry, speakstoryseries.com. I will fish out the other eight storytellers who will be performing this year and share those with you. Antonio Hosha is April 18th. May 9th is Cenga Zalka from Hungary. Antonio Hosha is a Brazilian-American teller who now lives in Maine. Cenga Zalka will be coming to us from Hungary. She travels the world bringing magical folk tales of her homeland to audiences of all ages, and gathering fascinating, unusual, and thought-provoking stories from other cultures as well. She has a special place in her heart for oldest, longest narratives in the world. In 2015, she was the recipient of the J.J. Renault Mentorship Grant through the National Storytelling Association with her mentor, Catherine Fairley, and she spent the year creating storytelling fringe performances based on traditional epics. She has a new book out in English, which she will bring with her on May 9th, 55 Traditional Stories from Around the World. That's from McFarland Publishers. And it includes ancient myths, legends, and folktales to showcase the earliest forms of superpowers that are still with us today in comic books and movies. Cenga's website, if you want to do a little more research on her, is www.zalkacenge, that's Z-A-L-K-A-C-S-E-N-G-E dot H-U / storyteller - English / But you can just come out and see Cenga on May 9th. June 13th, Charlotte Blake Alston is coming to speak from Pennsylvania, 7:30. And this session will be at the Storer Ballroom. You may have heard me mention earlier that the Speak Story Series is moving from the Shepherdstown Community Club over to Reynolds Hall across the street. And two sessions this season will be at a different location because of the room need for more space. So Charlotte Blake Alston will be appearing at Storer Ballroom on the third floor of the Shepherd University Student Center. Charlotte hails from Philadelphia. She's a nationally recognized teller, narrator, and singer. She performs with symphony orchestras all over the place, as breathes life into traditional and contemporary stories from the African and African-American oral and cultural traditions. She's made appearances all over the world, including Smithsonian Institution, JFK Center for the Performing Arts, the National Storytelling Festival, and the National Festival of Black Storytellers, NABS. Her international appearances include performances in Accra, Ghana, Cape Town, South Africa, Beijing in China, Basel in Switzerland, and the Cape Clear Island Storytelling Festival in Ireland. And Charlotte's website is www.charlotteblakealston.com. On July 11th, Kevin Locke, who's a traditional and very famous visionary hoop dancer, a preeminent performer of the indigenous Northern Plains flute, a traditional storyteller, a cultural ambassador, recording artist, and educator. He's Lakota and Anishinaabe, and will be performing at Storer Ballroom at 7:30 on July 11th for Speak. While Kevin's instructions as a performer and mentor in the storytelling and dance world were received from his immediate family and community, from extended family in every part of the world, Kevin will also share some of the lessons in global citizenship and how we can draw from our individual heritages to create a vibrant, evolving global civilization, embracing and celebrating our collective heritage. He's a recipient also of a National Heritage Fellowship with 40 years experience as a performer to hundreds of thousands of people in over 90 countries. And you can learn more about Kevin at www.kevinlock, with an E on the end of lock, kevinlocke.com. That's July 11th. August 8th, Jane Dorfman comes to speak from Maryland. And that'll be back at Reynolds Hall at 7:30. Jane will share some of the lesser heard stories from the Arabian Nights. So if you are an Arabian Night aficionado, or you think you've heard these stories before, guess again, because I bet you have not heard some of these. Tales for adults, full of twists and turns, a little risque, maybe a bit of cross-dressing, a little erotic poetry, and a lot of fun. Jane has taught storytelling as an adjunct professor at University of Maryland. She's performed for the Smithsonian and has told her stories on television on Channel 32. She's a repeat teller at the Washington Folk Festival, and I think this year is coordinating that event, and teaches storytelling classes at the University of Maryland and at Catholic University. And you can reach Jane Dorfman's website by going to voicesintheglen.org/storytellers/Jane-Dorfman. voicesintheglen.org/storytellers/Jane-Dorfman. That's August 8th for Jane Dorfman at Reynolds Hall at 7:30 p.m. On September 19th, big name, nationally recognized teller Bill Harley comes to Reynolds Hall at 7:30 from Rhode Island. Bill Harley uses song and story to paint a vibrant and pretty funny picture of American life. He's one of the funniest storytellers I know. He's a recipient of 2 Grammy Awards, has 35 award-winning recordings, some of which I am sure he will bring with him. So you can purchase some of those, as well as many books to his credit. Bill's work honors the universal, the joys and hardships we all share, through slices of life, little vignettes that feature warmth, wit, and wisdom. You will like this guy. His website is www.billharley.com, and he'll be with Speak on September 19th, again at Reynolds Hall. October 10th, Jan Blake will be with us from via Skype, all the way from England. Last year, Adam Booth had another teller come in late in the season, and was also joining us from Wales that time via Skype, and it worked out really, really well. The teller can see us in the audience, and we can see the teller, and there's dialogue, and if you fall asleep, he will call you out. So come this time and hear Jan Blake. Jan's been performing worldwide for over 25 years, specializing in stories from Africa, the Caribbean, and Arabia. She has a well-earned reputation for dynamic and generous telling. Some recent highlights include the Hay Festival, where she was storyteller in residence, the Viljandi Harvest Festival in Estonia, and TED Talks in Warsaw. This program will include seasonally appropriate spooky storytelling as well, since we're almost to Halloween on October 10th. We'll get to hear some scary stuff from Jan Blake as well. I've not heard Jan in person. I've heard her CDs and YouTube, and she's quite impressive. If you want to hear her, go to www.janblakestories.co.uk and come on October 10th to hear Jan Blake live on Skype from England, 7:30 at Reynolds Hall. November 14th, also Reynolds Hall, 7:30, from West Virginia, West Virginia's own poet laureate, Mark Harshman. Mark has authored 14 children's books, including The Storm, which won a Smithsonian Notable Book Award. He's a recipient of the Weatherford Prize for Believe What You Can, his second full-length collection of poems. Many of his poems have been anthologized by Kent State University, the University of Iowa, University of Georgia, and University of Arizona. This is a well-known poet that you're going to want to be there in person to hear. He was also an invited reader at the 2016 Greenwich Book Festival in London. And he does a monthly show for West Virginia Public Radio, The Poetry Break, which began airing this past January. So you can either hear him on West Virginia Public Radio on his own show, or you can Google him at www.poetlaureate.wv.gov. And winding up the season on December 12th, Adam Booth. Adam does an amazing closing session, and he'll tell you a little bit about the next season, season 6, I'm sure. Maybe not the full roster, probably, but a little bit about what you can expect next time. And of course, Adam will be sharing his blend of original stories, traditional mountain folklore, music, and a lot about what's going on in contemporary Appalachia. He's been featured at the International Storytelling Center, the National Storytelling Festival, the Appalachian Studies Association Conference, the National Storytelling Conference, and has been a spoken word residence at the Banff Center in British Columbia. Of course, you've heard him here in Shepherdstown or in the region, and I hope you come out again to hear him on December 12th. That's our own Adam Booth, December 12th at Speak. He's also a four-time champion of the West Virginia Liars Contest. I love to hear to say that, even though he often leaves that out of his biography at this point because he's got so many other places he wants you to know about. But I first heard him at a Liars Contest the first time I ever heard Adam Booth tell. It was not the state contest. I heard him tell in Garrett County, Maryland. But he wowed me even back then. Just after the turn of the century. So that's season 5 for the Speak Storytelling Series. I'll tell you a little more about stories in the round in a few minutes, but it's time for another tall tale. This one is traditional African-American story. If you grew up on the continental United States and you went to a U.S. public elementary school, you probably had an English literature textbook that included traditional American tall tales. I certainly did in Philadelphia. Our textbook was filled with stories about Davy Crockett, who of course was a real historic figure but has lots of tall tales attached to his name. There were stories about Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill, who I found out much later were really pretty recent inventions. Both Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill were invented by either chambers of commerce or newspapers who were looking to increase tourist traffic and newspaper subscriptions. They were not really folk inventions. Not that they're not good stories. There are some great stories there, and I even tell a few myself. But apparently those Pecos Bill stories, anyway, didn't appear till the early 1920s. And they were first created for newspapers. Now, later on, even after that, I learned there were folklorists who had collected similar stories, stories almost the same as those Pecos Bill stories, from African Americans 20 years earlier, right around the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And those stories included many of the exploits and narrative images that are claimed for Pecos Bill, right down to his shooting skills, his snake for a lasso, and that name Bill in the Texas Territory where Pecos Bill is famous for operating. But now that you're listening to www.enlightenradio.org from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, I'm going to tell you one of those more traditional African-American tales. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. And just a little note, in many parts of the country, you've probably heard this on this storytelling hour before, but a panther, a big wild cat, used to be called a painter. And that's what it means in this story. This man, Bill, was out hunting very early one morning. Spotted 10 ducks there to his left, sitting all on one tree branch. He was about to take aim when he looked to his right. Spied a painter standing there watching him. He looked again, and behind the painter was a big 10-point buck deer. He turned round, and there was a whole covey of partridge. He didn't know where to start shooting. Then he saw right in front of him, coming straight for him, a big black bear. Well, he knowed the bear would kill him, sure. So he raised his double-barrel muzzle loader, pulled both triggers at the same time. That shot hit the bear dead on, killed him outright. But the ramrod, well, that shot out too, hit the tree limb, caught the toes, every one of those 10 ducks before they had time to react. They each fell over dead. The hammer on the left side of the muzzle loader, it flew off and hit the deer square between the eyes. That right hammer, it hit the painter, and he fell down dead. Well, that Bill, he was a quick study. Just that fast, he whipped off his overcoat and tossed it over the covey of partridges, so he got them too. By now, he was getting worried. How was he going to get all this meat home? He had a big blade he made at the blacksmith shop. It was big and heavy, long as his arm. But that didn't faze Bill. He carried it with him everywhere. So he used that blade to cut him two nice, thick saplings. Pussy willow trees, they were. Some call them slippery elm. He used those saplings to make him a sled. Peeled off the bark and used that to tie the rails together. And then he skinned the deer and cut the pelt in strips. That made the harness for his own head and back so he could pull that sled. He commenced to haul that sled, heading home with all that game loaded on. It was a heavy load, and he had miles and miles to go. Took him most of the morning to get there with all he had to drag behind him. But when he got home and took off the harness, there was no sign of the sled behind him. He hadn't had time to cure that deer skin, so it stretched and stretched and stretched as he walked. It hadn't caught up with him yet. He just tied the harness to the gatepost, figured he'd have his dinner to revive himself, and then he'd go back out and find the sled. While he was cooking and eating, the sun was getting brighter and hotter and higher in the sky. When he finished all that, ate and cleaned up besides, he went back to put on the harness, and there was the sled just coming up the lane at a steady pace right to the gate. The sun dried that deerskin harness while he was going about his business. He learned something that day, Bill did. No point wasting time on a job the sun gonna do for you anyway. This man, Bill, one of the best hunters in the country, he told me he was out hunting once and came up on a big swampy lake. He sat down to rest, waiting to see if he could see a squirrel to get for dinner. And here come a big land beast. Said it was a cow going down to the edge water to drink. And then he sees a big water animal, alligator. That land beast hit that cow with his tail and knocked her clear to the middle of the lake. Well, Bill thought,
blasted. I can't sit still and watch a water beast get the better of a land beast. I'm a land man myself. He raised his Winchester. They had Winchester, pump Winchesters in those days. He shot that gator 32 times under the left eyelid before that beast could blink it. Lassoed the cow with the snake he saw swimming nearby and dragged her out of the pond, put her on top of the gator, and dragged them both home by the tails. Another time, Bill was at a big dance and came down on another man's foot in the middle of some fancy footwork. Well, that man started yelling, pulled out a 45, so Bill, of course, had to shoot him. Bill said, "I just had this itty-bitty 32. So I shot him 5 times. He wouldn't fall over, so I went up and knocked him down. I said, go on and die like a man." But the story I like best from my friend Bill is a running tale. Old Bill slapped a white man one evening in Texas for good cause, but it was still a mistake. He run off. He knew some of them other Texas white men would come after him, so he went for the railroad. He stopped running long enough when he got to the depot to ask the agent how long for a train. Depot agent said, "One just left 30 minutes ago." Bill took off in the dark, running on 2 feet after that train. On the way, he passed a buck deer. He wasn't paying much attention to who he was running past. He just called over his shoulder, "Boy, you slap a white man too? Now running for that last train." Bill didn't wait for no answer. He just kept running. That deer was just too slow for Bill to wait for him. Soon Bill got to the hard paved road and caught up with a brand new automobile. Fastest on record, 80 miles an hour. Driver leaned out the window, calls him, "Get in, I'll give you a lift." Bill jumped in, driver guns the engine to 90 miles an hour. Bill says, "Is that the best you can do? I was making better time on 2 feet." He jumps out and runs on. That automobile was just too slow for Bill to wait for him. He comes to a brand new airport. No hardtop, just a big level field. Plane was taking off, running down the field on 2 wheels, 90 miles an hour. Pilot waves, so Bill hops in. Plane takes off and climbs high as it can go. Bill asks the pilot, "How fast is this now?" Pilot says, "Fastest on record, 400 miles an hour." Bill says, "Blasted man, I was going faster on my own 2 feet." Straps on a parachute. Bails out that plane just too slow for Bill to wait on him. When Bill hit the ground, who'd he see but that same buck deer? So him and that deer run along side by side for a time while Bill was resting. He must have scared that deer. Bill was a little scared his own self. Finally, looking just out of the corner of his eye, thought that deer was a thin gray-brown man. Bill says to him, "If you slapped a white man too, you better get up some speed. You could run faster. You take that rocking chair off of your head." And then Bill took off running and never did come back to Texas. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host on the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour. Today is Monday, April 10th, and we've been telling tall tales since 12 o'clock noon today. We have just another 10 minutes or so. So I'm going to tell you about 2 storytelling events coming up. And by the way, if you have a tall tale that you'd like to share, either on air some other week, some other Monday, or you want me to tell, you can reach me at 301-730-1638. I'd love to hear your tall tale experiences and how you came up with these stories, where they came from. Did you make them up yourself? Did you hear them from your family? Did you read them in a book? Tall tales are great stories for children and for adults.
Although sometimes you have to pay attention to who's in the audience. Okay. I will be telling stories on April 15th, this coming Saturday, in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, at the home of Larry and Mary Ann Hayes, my good friends, who are hosting me there. You can reach Larry and Mary Ann at 717-414-7286, and they will give you their address and how to get to their house and any other details you want to know. You can also reach them at their email address, but it's complicated, so you're going to have a pencil and at least your hand to write on for me to give you this address. It's larryandmarianne911@gmail.com. But Larry and Marianne is spelled LarryandMarianne911 @gmail.com. LarryandMarianne911@gmail.com or 717-414-7286. And of course, you can always call me, Fanny Crawford, 301-730-1638, or reach me at my email address at fanitsky@hotmail.com. Enlightened Radio, which you are listening to right this minute, and if you're not listening on your very own internet device, you should write down this website so next week you can listen to us on your own computer or phone or however you access the internet. We are enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. So I just told you about April 15th storytelling. I'll be telling grandma stories and a tall tale or two as part of that. Some family stories, which are almost tall tales, and then a true tall tale that involves one of my grandmas. And that's at 7:30 p.m. on April 15th, and you're going to call 717-414-7286 for more information about that session in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Stories in the Round, the series that I coordinate in Hagerstown, will start on April 24th with Eloise Schottler doing her story, Ready to Serve. That's about the nurses from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing who went to the French front in World War I, sent by General Pershing to save American lives on battlefields. 64 young women, some of whom had no idea what they were getting into back during World War I. And I think the big celebrations for World War I memorabilia and remembrances just started this week, at least in Hagerstown they did. 1917 was when that war began. So come and hear Eloise Schottler tell that World War I story that she's recreated from letters from those nurses to their families while they were overseas, from interviews with family members of those women, and visiting artifacts and memorabilia from that time all over the country. And in France, too, I believe. I think she told me that. So Stories in the Round meets at 7 p.m. The first session of our nine-session series will be April 24th, 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Sear Foss Pike. You can get more information about that session and purchase season's tickets as well as individual tickets from me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or reach me by email at fanitsky@hotmail.com. We're coming up close to the end of our storytelling hour. Stay tuned next week. It could be more tall tales. It could be a guest interview. We haven't decided that yet. I do know that on May 1st, we're going to have Jane Dorfman, who will be telling a little about her Arabian Nights stories, and she'll be a featured storyteller for the Speak Story series here in Shepherdstown, so you can get a preview of what Jane will be telling if you tune in on May 1st. That's a Monday, to www.enlightenradio.org. For more information about Stories in the Round, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, 301-730-1638. And coming up on enlightenradio.org after the storytelling hour today, we will be hearing from Albert Einstein, who will actually be in the studio with us today, performing his lectures on the theory of relativity, which some people even today say are tall tales, a whole series of lectures. You want to hear this from the horse's mouth, because Albert has been sharing some of these stories with us and blows my mind. You can hear it direct from the source at 1 o'clock today, maybe a little bit of bluegrass before that starts, and more bluegrass afterwards. But there's a whole series of lectures that you're going to want to hear from old Al. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host, signing off from the noontime epic Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour on Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Enlightened Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community, that means you, to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned. Come back with us next Monday at 12 noon. In the meantime, you can listen to Albert Einstein sharing his tall tales and the truth on enlightenradio.org. Bye.